Iowa farmers feed the world, but can we feed ourselves? It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning, I'm Charity Nebbe. Iowans spend $8 billion on food every year, but only 14% of that food is produced within the state of Iowa. That is beginning to change. The idea of eating locally is catching on. Consumers like it because fresh food tastes better and is healthier. Some farmers like it because it can cut out the middleman and increase profits. Policymakers like it because it's better for the economy and the environment. But there are many barriers yet to be overcome. In the next hour, we'll explore the state of agriculture today and the growing local foods movement, and we'll talk about farmers markets from the perspective of the growers and the communities, and we'll find out what it takes to make a farmers market thrive. You can join the conversation after this news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Iowans spend $8 billion on food every year, but only 14% of the food they buy is produced within the state of Iowa. There is a movement afoot to change that. Eating locally grown food can benefit consumers because fresh food tastes better and is better for you. It can be a benefit to some farmers, particularly small producers. Many policymakers like it because it's better for the economy and for the environment, but there are many barriers yet to be overcome. My guests today are Rich Pirog, Associate Director of the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture at Iowa State University. Hello, Rich.
Good morning.
We also have Ginny Giske, president of the Iowa Farmers Market Association and manager of the Drake Neighborhood Farmers Market. Thank you so much for being here, Ginny.
Happy to be here.
And also Matt Russell, state food policy project coordinator at the Drake University Agricultural Law Center. He's also, now, you're part owner of Coyote Run Farm?
Correct.
All right.
And thanks. And glad to be here.
Well, it's nice to have you here as well. And, of course, you can join our conversation. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPRTalk. You can also send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And, Rich, I want to start with you today. Iowa has always been a huge food producer, but most farm production in the state has been focused, at least in recent years, has been focused on seed corn, soybeans, and livestock, primarily pork, I think. You've studied how production in the state breaks down. How much do we grow that can be sold and consumed in the state?
Well, we're able to raise meat, milk, and eggs all 12 months of the year. Obviously, because of the season we have, we can only provide fruits and vegetables for a short portion of the year. But with things like high tunnels, which are more modified greenhouses, we can extend the length of the season.
And high tunnels are also known as hoop houses, right?
Also known as hoop houses, right. They're hooped structures with plastic strewn over them that farmers can grow fruits or vegetables or in them. And right now, fruits and vegetables make up less than 1%, actually less than 0.2% of total farm receipts in the state. And we certainly have room to build in fruits and vegetables in the state, and there have been increases in both fruits and vegetables and in direct markets. You know, if we look at the 2007 census, there was almost 3,000 farms in Iowa that were selling directly to consumers, and that's a 18% increase since the 2002 census. So we have seen those increases, but it's important to keep in mind that when we talk about direct markets, whether it's farmers markets or selling to restaurants or hospitals, it's not just fruits and vegetables. It's meat, milk, and eggs and other items that Iowans can grow.
Well, it does seem kind of amazing that here we are in this farming state and so few fruits and vegetables are actually being grown that can be consumed. Tell me a little bit about the culture that led to this situation.
Well, I think after World War II, we saw this across the nation. There was a move towards more specialization in certain types of crops and livestock enterprises, and so both that infrastructure in those states and the support systems in those states that were going to produce those items were more reinforced, and in states that weren't going to be major producers of those items, that infrastructure and the technical and other resource support systems were not reinforced. So in Iowa, there was a focus more on corn and beans and cattle and hogs and eggs. And other states like California and Michigan continued to build their fruit and vegetable industries and other industries as well. And you see those trends all around the country. Actually, before World War II, Iowa, going from the 20s to the 50s, Iowa had numerous crop and livestock enterprises on at least 1% of Iowa farms. Today, there's about 10 of those crop and livestock enterprises, and the only crop and livestock enterprises that are on more than 50% of Iowa farms are corn and soybeans. But even so, and even though this is more of a corn and soybean state and cattle and hogs and eggs, there's room for farmers that want to do direct marketing of other meat, milk, and egg products, and there's room for more farmers wanting to grow fruits and vegetables in markets that would include Iowa but may also include nearby metro areas like Minneapolis and Omaha.
And Matt, you've been studying this issue as well. When did people, a larger group of people, start to get interested in local food? When did that become an issue that was started to get noticed by policymakers?
Well, I think for a number of years, I mean, we could say 20, 25, 30 years, pioneers in this state and across the country were really looking at the food system and trying to think of a different way to do it. I really look at the year 1999-2000 as when those pioneers coalesced enough to really start what I call a social movement around food. Leading up to about 2000, all the momentum was, Rich had described it, as kind of coming out of World War II and this real industrialization of food. And since 2000, you've seen a growing number of people still purchase their food from the global supply chains, but they're saying, we don't want to only purchase food from or only eat from the global supply chains. There's other ways in which we want to eat. And I think certainly we've seen some downsides on the health side to the industrial food system. There's not just been an upside to cheaper, more abundant food. There's been some downside as well with some health implications. So I'm saying from about 2000, we've really seen a change, and that momentum just continues to grow.
And of the people producing food that is being sold locally, is there something that characterizes these growers that is different from the large corn and soybean farms that we're used to seeing?
Yeah, really, when you talk about agriculture in Iowa and you're talking about commodity agriculture, you're really talking about undifferentiated products that are then very efficiently grown in Iowa, very effectively grown, and pushed into that global supply chain as undifferentiated products. I mean, number two yellow-dented corn is just that. Pork bellies or pork bellies, steer carcasses, that's really undifferentiated. Those who are trying to make a living or capture this kind of food movement opportunities, those are differentiated products. They're products that have qualities and characteristics that can be marketed and identified and connected all the way back to the farms that are growing them. So that's really the difference in terms of the product. And then there's a big difference in how people are experiencing that. You go and you buy national brands from the global supply chain, and you go to the farmer's market and you buy food directly from a farm that consumer's building a relationship with.
Well, and Rich, I know that particularly from the early 1980s on, and I don't really know when this movement started, but we've seen more and more small family farms driven out of the business. As that has happened, and we've seen much larger conglomerations or factory farms, has that made it more difficult to grow food that can be sold here? Are there small farms, enough small farms to do that?
Well, Matt's certainly a great example of a small farmer that's, you know, working out a business and doing very well at it. And at the same time, he works off the farm. And I think we have to rethink sort of what we might see as a farmer in both these situations and even in the corn and soybean situations where some of our farmers that have, you know, several hundred acres of corn and soybeans may also have an off-farm job. And it's not necessarily a farmer. It can be a farmer that works full-time, but it could also be a farmer that works part-time in selling it to various direct markets. And I think the difficulty issues, you know, I'm sure we'll spend a little more time with them, but some of the difficulty issues that we see are not just about production. They're about all the other parts of that food chain that we have to negotiate, the standards, the labeling, the being able to sell to markets where they may be used to working with one big aggregator, and the transaction costs or the time needed to work with 20 smaller farmers can be an obstacle. All of these play into that, but what we continue to see over the last 15 to 20 years are more not only existing farmers interested in this, but we have people that left Iowa, that were in the business world and in other states even, and come back to Iowa. Perhaps they've inherited the farm and they're wanting to start a business or do something a little differently, or the sons and daughters of farmers in Iowa that want to get started, and they want to get started on a smaller scale in some kind of, as Matt talked about, with some differentiated products out there to get started. And so it's very exciting to see this sort of conglomeration of all different kinds of both what we would call beginning farmers and beginning again farmers.
Well, and of course, when we think about these big farms, I mean, they really are very large, certainly most of them over 300 acres. When we're talking about the smaller farms where people are selling their products locally, how big are these farms? I'm sure they're all over the place, but what's an example?
Well, I think a great question for Matt. He would be an example, and Matt could tell you how many acres he
sure.
has.
Sure, Matt?
Yeah, our farm is 110 acres, and I work off the farm, and my partner in the farm, Patrick Stanley, works full-time on the farm. It's 110 acres, and we think we can generate one income from that 110 acres. But this is really a both and it's not an either or. We're seeing farms that are large, 1,000 acres plus, that are actually diversifying and building some enterprises on that farm that are connected to the local and regional food system. So it's really more complex than an either or. It's really a both and that's also really exciting because it creates tremendous opportunities across the whole state. For very small farms that are measured in square feet rather than acres, all the way up to multi 1,000 acre farms that are able to put in some enterprises and build more economic opportunity around what we're calling local and regional food systems.
And we've been focusing on the production side so far. We're going to take a small break, and when we get back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the actual marketing side, selling these products to individuals. And Ginny Juske will be talking with you. She's president of the Iowa Farmers Market Association. We are also talking today with Rich Pirog from the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture at Iowa State University and Matt Russell, State Food Policy Project Coordinator at the Drake University Agricultural Law Center. It's Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. We are talking about locally grown food, buying it, eating it, producing it. And today I'm talking with Rich Pirog, who is the Associate Director of the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture at Iowa State University. I'm also talking with Matt Russell, State Food Policy Project Coordinator at the Drake University Agricultural Law Center. He's also part owner of Coyote Run Farm, which is in rural Lacona. And also on the line, Ginny Juske, President of the Iowa Farmers Market Association and Manager of the Drake Neighborhood Farmers Market. And we'd love to hear from you as well with your questions. If you are a grower who's getting into this business, maybe you have a small farm, we'd love to hear your story. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Ginny, now I want to focus a little bit more on the actual selling of local food to individuals. And of course, that's one of the things that farmers markets do. When did you get involved with the farmers market movement?
1997.
And what was it that made you want to get involved?
My market is held in the parking lot of my church, and the church itself was trying to get more visible in the community and play a bigger part in the neighborhood. And One evening I was having supper at the Drake Diner, looked across at our empty parking lot and thought, you know, we could have a farmer's market over there. That's how it started.
And why did you see a need?
The Drake neighborhood is large, but there's not a grocery store very close. And who doesn't love a fresh tomato? And we also wanted to create a place that would be family-friendly and fun and just something to do in the middle of the week.
So you felt, in addition to those reasons, but that people in the Drake neighborhood didn't really have good access to fresh produce.
That's correct.
And how long did it take for the farmers market there to catch on?
Not long. It was just wonderful. The idea came to us in February, and that June we opened. We opened with 8 vendors, and the number of vendors increased steadily until now we average 20 vendors a week.
And what do you think it's accomplished to have the vendors there, to have the people coming? How has it changed your neighborhood?
It's been wonderful. People use the market as a gathering place for friends. They see neighbors. They get acquainted with people that are growing or preparing their food. There's always something fun for children to do, and we get free health screenings like blood pressure and glucose tests. And a lot of people take advantage of those, and they just come to the market. Maybe they don't buy much, but it's an outing, and they come and enjoy, and they take home some good food.
Matt, among the locally food or the locally grown food that gets sold in Iowa, how much of it gets sold through farmers markets?
That's a really good question. I'll maybe bounce it back to Rich. That'd be a good thing for Iowa State to maybe dive into and try to help us understand. We don't have really good numbers on the local food system, and we have tremendous numbers for commodity agriculture, but we don't have a lot of good data on the local stuff. I know that there was a study done a few years ago, and I think it may have been updated, where there was a couple $100 million worth of food that was moving through kind of direct markets and local foods or farmers markets, but I don't know, Rich, do you have more recent data? Jenny does. So I'll pass it off to Jenny. She can jump in.
Okay, thank you. Last summer, 2009, an economic impact study was done of farmers markets, and I just happened to bring the statistics from that. And while it's not – the numbers are not compared to the big picture, I can give you some numbers for farmers markets, and that includes – what you normally think of a farmer's market, as well as the road food stands,
Okay, roadside stands.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. So it says that these are the results of that study that was done in 2009. Farmer's markets generated $38.4 million in sales, and that results in an estimated $59.4 million gross sales transactions directly or indirectly related to market activity. Iowa is fourth in the number of farmers markets in the nation and second in the number of markets per capita. We have experienced a 70% increase in the number of farmers markets over the last 15 years.
So it's definitely a movement that is growing a great deal in Iowa. Rich, do you have an idea of how big a chunk of local food farmers markets make up?
Matt's right. That's an example of a small study that actually we've discussed actually doing, and it actually dovetails with the amendment that passed this year by the Iowa legislature that is requesting that the Leopold Center, in working with its partners, develop a local food and farm plan for the state of Iowa, complete with funding and policy recommendations to help support and expand local food systems and overcome some of those obstacles that we have in creating them. But to answer your question as well, the Leopold Center and with its partners around the state has a group called the Regional Food Systems Working Group, and we're now covering about 70 of the 99 counties. And we meet quarterly. We exchange ideas about some of the challenges we have and how we move things forward. And this issue of being able to document sales and their impact, I think, is really critical. And probably the longest, outside of the farmers market data that Ginny talked about, the longest sales data that we have, the most that they've been collecting since 98 is in the Blackhawk County area. And we started there in 98 with about three different institutions and about $100,000 worth of sales. And we're now, as of 09, well over 25 institutions. And these are grocery stores and co-ops and restaurants. And it's over $2.5 million. And if you could imagine that kind of increase in every county in the state or every two or three county area, the impact would be pretty sizable. Dave Swenson in the Department of Economics and the Leopold Center have partnered on a number of different studies. And one of the more recent ones, we looked at several scenarios for just fruits and vegetables for the entire state. And this would include sales at farmers markets, but beyond it, and was a scenario where we would grow and supply more of those fruits and vegetables that we currently are not supplying a lot of. We supply a lot of sweet corn during sweet corn season, but we don't supply a lot of carrots and broccoli and things like that. And according to Dave's data, this increase in production at the farm level only would mean about $61 million in additional sales, retail value of $230 million, and about 650 farm-level jobs. And the other thing that's real important when we think about this, particularly with fruits and vegetables, there might be this impression that, if we grow more of this local food, it's going to take all this other acreage out of production. And actually, to supply our own needs in Iowa, we really don't need that many acres of fruits and vegetables. It's a small amount of acres, but the return per dollar on those acres is very high. So I think it's very compatible with the existing a local food infrastructure, I think, is very compatible with the other aspects of Iowa agriculture.
Well, I want to talk more about that after we take a news break here. But what are some of the other ways that local food is getting into the market? You mentioned going through some grocery stores, but what are some of the other avenues?
Hospitals, nursing homes, retail, buying clubs.
And buying clubs like
community-supported ag, where you buy a subscription, or there is the Iowa Food Cooperative, where you go to a website, you become a member, you place an order, and once a month, those items are you pick them up. It's sort of a in between a community-supported ag enterprise, and it's basically online ordering of local food.
All right. Well, we'll talk more about that in a moment. We're talking about the local food movement and sustainable agriculture throughout the state of Iowa today. We're also talking about farmers markets. On the line with me today are Rich Pirog, Associate Director of the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture at ISU, Ginny Giske, President of the Iowa Farmers Market Association and Manager of the Drake Neighborhood Farmers Market, and Matt Russell, State Food Policy Project Coordinator at the Drake University Agricultural Law Center. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and we're talking today about local food, farmers markets, and sustainable agriculture in the state of Iowa. We'd love for you to join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Do you shop at farmers markets? Does it matter to you where your food comes from? Do you pay attention to that at the grocery store? Does it matter to you if you buy it at a farmer's market? Does it matter if it's organic or not organic? Let us know. 866-780-9100. at IPR Talk on Twitter, or talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org is our email address. With me today, I have Rich Pirog, Associate Director of the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture at Iowa State University, Matt Russell, State Food Policy Project Coordinator at the Drake University Agricultural Law Center, and also Ginny Jiske, President of the Iowa Farmers Market Association and the Manager of the Drake Neighborhood Farmers Market. Ginny, I want to start with you now. Of the producers that you have selling at your farmers market near Drake in Des Moines, where do they come from? Are they nearby?
Not nearby as in Des Moines. Most of them farm over in the Colfax area, down south by New Virginia, Winterset, Indianola. I have one vendor whose acreage is on the south side of Des Moines.
That brings up an interesting question, I think, about urban farmers markets, because urban farmers markets tend to be very successful and do very well. But I wonder if the producers coming from these more rural areas make it easier to get some local food in urban areas than it is in some of the rural areas. Rich, do you know about that?
Well, we do know that, and Ginny might have some newer numbers with her study, but over 70% of the farmers market sales were generated by the top five markets. So, you know, the ones in the big metro areas of Des Moines and Cedar Rapids and the Quad Cities and Sioux City and Waterloo. And so, you know, we see more opportunities as far as larger sales in those areas. And your question really brings up, I think, another important point for rural areas. I think farmers markets are one opportunity, but I think in our rural areas, they need to look at perhaps a little broader regional markets where they may be selling in farmers markets, but they may also try to sell in other markets as well, like farmers in southwest Iowa looking at Omaha, for example, or farmers in extreme northern Iowa eyeing Minneapolis. Those, you know, the idea of local, there's no number that of mileage that defines it. And so farmers can look at several different opportunities in those markets. But, of course, when they do that, they have to meet those particular specs that you have in those markets. So but rural areas have more of a challenge, but in trying to just earn income just from local sales, local meaning maybe in this case just at their local farmers market in a small community like Alba or something like that. Mm-hmm. But when you get into Des Moines and other areas, farmers can, you know, the Des Moines farmers market, the largest in the state, there's a number of farmers that have tremendous sales just from that every week.
Is there a difference between different parts of the state as far as how much food is being grown there that can be sold locally? I know you've looked at production of fruits and vegetables. Are there areas of the state where that has caught on to a greater extent, Rich?
If you look at the map, and there's a population issue here that I think is part of the reason, but you're going to see more of these fruit and vegetable farms that have been there historically in the eastern part of the state, where it's also where the population centers are. So if you go from Des Moines east, you've got many of your larger metro areas. And over time, a lot of those fruit and vegetable farms have sprung up to support those areas. And but we're seeing, as we look at some of these new enterprises, they're happening in most parts of the state, not just in eastern Iowa.
And who does this create opportunities for as far as getting into farming? You've talked a little bit about some people returning to the state and starting out. Does this create an opportunity for people who may not have a chance to farm otherwise?
I think it does. And I think we need to, in our various roles, like with this group here with Ginny and Matt and I and all our partners, that whether they're farmers or they work for farm organizations or agencies or universities, is to really look at the opportunities we have with the populations at hand that want to farm. And that may include, you know, the sons and daughters of existing corn and soybean farmers, but it may also include people that are in different types of occupations that aspire to farm. And, you know, we think of some of our minority groups in the state, groups that may aspire to farm, Latinos, Sudanese, Hmong, other populations that farmed in their own home countries, and they have an interest in doing the same here. And what kind of programs and what kind of support can we provide for them to help provide more local food in the state?
Matt, are you able to help some of those farmers find their opportunities?
Well, we're working at Drake. We're working on new and beginning farmer issues. Our director, Neil Hamilton, has been really engaged on this. We're looking more at the policy dimensions. What's the kind of the framework in which, you know, we have good policy and good initiatives to help this, as opposed to like one-on-one individual help. We also coordinate along with the Iowa Heartland RC&D. The Buy Fresh, Buy Local campaign for Greater Des Moines. So we are seeing some interaction with individual farms through that campaign. I think the most significant thing about the opportunities for new and beginning farmers in the local and regional food systems is that there's an opportunity to enter agriculture with much lower capitalization, probably a little more physical work, maybe a little more time, but not as much capitalization. So when we bought our 110-acre farm, we're able to buy that farm and put in a couple of acres of produce, where that's a lot of work, but it wasn't a lot of capital investment. We didn't have to go out and borrow $1 million in order to scale up to the size of a commodity farm. So I think that's the real important key, is that the opportunities are emerging out of the markets. I mean, there's a market for this kind of food, where 10, 15 years ago, those markets didn't exist, those opportunities didn't exist. We see those opportunities happening today for younger people, for immigrants, for people who have another full-time career and are making a farm part of kind of a self-employed little enterprise. Just lots of opportunity out there.
The number to call to join our conversation is 866-780-9100, and Max is on the line from Windsor Heights. Hello, Max.
Yeah.
What's your question?
Well, I was just at the Drake Farmers Market yesterday and bought quite a few things. And I ask the different vendors, I say, do you use spray? And some say they do, and some say they don't. And I always wonder, when I buy from the ones that say they don't, if I'm maybe just buying from the ones that aren't telling the truth. And I wonder how you can assess the quality of the products that you're buying and the sustainability and so forth. And then a couple other comments, too. I think it would be a much more pleasant environment without the amplified music, rather, maybe having somebody that's playing a banjo or something like that. That would fit in more, I think, with the whole farmer's market concept. So those are my two comments.
All right, Max, thanks a lot. Ginny, can you respond to that? How do we know when a farmer is growing organically or in a more conventional way? And how do we know how can we verify that?
I don't verify it. I take people at their word. I can tell by looking at the produce. If produce is just like picture perfect, you got to figure there's something used on it. I don't have any certified organic growers. Certification for organic growing is arduous, but I do have a lot of growers that have stopped using chemicals because people don't want chemically treated produce anymore. But to get certified, you've got to not grow anything for, 3-5 years, and then get certified by the government. But you can call yourself organic, and then the government, the Iowa Agriculture Department, will stop by unannounced to just see how much chemicals you really are using. So that's what I know about organic or chemically treated produce. I always encourage people to wash anything you buy before you eat it, whether that said it's organic or chemical.
Right. Well, chemicals aren't the only thing that can make you sick on food.
That's right.
Matt, do you want to add something to that?
Yeah, I think the Max's question, I think, is really, really appropriate, really spot on. And one of the things that's happening in this is that the consumer, the people who are eating this food and buying this food, when I talk about earlier, when I talked about, you know, up to 2000, we had one kind of trend, and now from 2000, we're moving in a different direction. One of the things that we're moving in a different direction is that consumers don't want to take their food for granted. They want to be more engaged. And so one of the things to do is to ask, to build a relationship with the farmer or the food business that's providing the local foods. So consumers have the opportunity and actually need to become more engaged so that they can sort out, you know, what is it that they want to buy, and then identify the places that can provide that, and also sort through, you know, some of the shortcuts or other things that people are taking. In other words, you have to build a trusting relationship and asking questions and ground truthing. I know we have people out, you know, we don't have agritourism, but we have a lot of people out to our farm that are our customers at different times of the year. And even if they don't come out themselves, knowing that they've had that invitation builds credibility, you know, that what we're telling them we're doing on our farm is actually what we're doing. So I think that engagement between the consumer and the farmer is a good thing, and it's increasing, and it's empowering both the farms and the consumers.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Max, and I'm sure Ginny has registered your vote for acoustic music at the Drake Farmers Market. John is on the line in Rhodes. Hello, John.
Yes.
What would you like to talk about?
Well, I would like to have the people there address the problem of economics of this whole thing. I know the manager of the Drake Farmers Market gave the figures for sales, and when I saw those figures and I divided them up by the number of vendors, it came out to gross sales of $4,000 per vendor. That's not even part-time employment. That's certainly not enough to raise a family,
right,
do anything like this. It's creating a peasant society is what you're doing.
Well, Matt, you can respond to that, and I'm sure Rich has something he'd like to add as well. But why don't we start with you, Matt, since you actually have a farm and are making part of a living on it.
Yeah, there's really a diversity here. You've got people who are retired, who are engaged in this kind of agriculture. You've got young people starting up, and you've got people all in the middle. And so you're going to see incomes really all over the place. Based on scale and personal desire in terms of, you know, the kind of income that somebody wants out of this, but I think the key here is the caller does have a very good point, and that is, how do we build the infrastructure so that we actually have more and more market opportunities that can create the kind of commerce that will make these farms even more viable. So it's a challenge, and I think that's part of what the legislature has done when they've asked the Leopold Center to do this food and farm plan, as well as, you know, the revitalization of the Iowa Food Policy Council. I think it's the Iowa Food Systems Council that's being developed now, certainly with the 10 Buy Fresh, Buy Local campaigns across the state. But certainly we need to figure out how if this is going to be economically viable, that we're paying attention to the markets and paying attention to how much commerce is happening, and that we're actually hitting multiple goals.
Rich, do you want to weigh in on that?
My comments about the economics are spot on with John's, from the standpoint that we have to look at this. We can't just assume, even though some folks, local food is, for the people selling it, local food is as much of a social and community thing as it is an economic thing. There are folks that want to have as their primary driver, they want it to have a significant part of their income from these markets. And in those cases, we have to develop better tools and help producers on business management and financial management so they in turn can do that. And I'll just give you a real simple example. If you're looking at several markets and you look at your transaction costs, and let's say you really do want to make a significant part of your money at a market, and you might be able to get more money at a farmer's market, but you may have to spend more time there. But you could maybe sell the same amount of item
to a retailer or to another market where the your actual return is going to be lower, but your transaction cost is lower. So you have to balance all of these things, and you have to look at what, I guess the best way I'd put it, where are those sweet spots in the market that you know you can compete in and do well in. And so we've really, these type of farmers, they have to be more than just really good producers. They have to be really savvy marketers, and they need to know what their cost of production and their cost of marketing is.
We only have a moment left, and so I want to ask each of you very briefly, Rich, what do you think the biggest challenge is to creating a more thriving market for local foods?
I think the biggest challenge is being able to provide the kind of infrastructure and incentives to make this to make it happen. And I think this Iowa Local Food and Farm Plan is a great opportunity the legislature is giving us to at least provide the kind of recommendations of what that system might look like.
All right, Matt.
I think it's being real intentional empowering the consumers and the farmers to continue to build relationships with each other, and to collectively, and communities as well, to collectively create the environment where people can find and buy really high quality locally grown foods.
And Jenny, what do you think?
It's a combination of what Matt and Rich both said, with one of the goals being to entice younger people to be the growers. The average age of a farmer's market produce grower is in the mid-50s, and we need younger people to get involved so that all of this can continue and grow.
All right. Jenny, thank you very much. Jenny Jiske is president of the Iowa Farmers Market Association and manager of the Drake Neighborhood Farmers Market. We also have been talking today with Matt Russell, State Food Policy Project Coordinator at the Drake University Agricultural Law Center, and Rich Pirog, Associate Director of the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture at Iowa State University. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thanks a lot. And now we're heading out on the road to Ragbri, which is heading from Charles City to Waterloo today. And our Ragbri correspondent, Jason Parkin, Des Moines-based meteorologist, is on the line. It's 82 miles today, so no more of that easy stuff.
There are a few more hills today, but boy, it's not a whole lot harder. I think the biggest thing about this year that we were talking about is how great the weather has been. I mean, it's just been beautiful. I mean, even, you know, it's a little hot on Tuesday, but there really hasn't even been any wind. It's just been fantastic.
And it really cooled off last night.
It did. I was worried. We actually got up at a reasonable hour. You know, it's a long day. It's 82 miles, I think. So we got up, you know, a little earlier today to kind of get a head start on things. And I was kind of worried I'd be cold heading out of town, but it's warmed up a little bit. It's just gorgeous today.
Where did I catch you today?
I am in Clarksville in Butler County. You might be able to hear music in the background. I'm kind of in an alley just off of Main Street to kind of get away from the sound. Great crowds. I just saw a device I'd never seen before. There was a man who rode by on what is, if you've been to the gym and been on an elliptical machine, this was like an elliptical machine that goes down the road.
Wow.
And so he was standing up and, you know, holding the handlebars almost like you'd be on a jet ski, except he was ellipticaling down the road.
I hope he has brakes.
Yeah, well, we were wondering about that. I don't know that I'd want to be that far off the ground, but kind of a high center of gravity. But that was kind of cool. What else have I seen? I saw there are two guys, and I only saw one of them, who do the whole thing on unicycles. And they're probably 8 feet off the ground. I saw one of those guys go by today. I saw a gentleman in a Speedo named Augie. He had his name embroidered into the Speedo. That was unpleasant.
Well, I was reading in the paper this morning about a big party in Cartersville yesterday that got broken up by the sheriff because of nudity.
Yeah, I did. I may have seen some of that. I was there. They had a big pond, and you know, it was kind of nice to stop and take a dip. And I saw a little bit of that, but apparently later in the afternoon it got a little wacky. And I heard, I heard 6 or 7 law enforcement folks came and kind of told everybody to move along. that was it.
Well, the people with the pond said they were ready for some quiet anyway after that, so.
I believe it. And but the people that were having the whatever it was, I guess it was, it didn't, it's kind of a very, very small town, I guess, and they were charging people to go in the pond and use this big swing, and they were, whatever money they made, they were donating to the town, to, you know, Betterment and all that. So, I don't know, I thought that was kind of nice, and I don't know, you know, sometimes people get nutty. It's a vacation, you know, it is a big rolling party, and it's funny because over the years that I've done it, like 10 or 11 years, it's kind of gotten tamer, and so it's kind of funny to see that again. I don't know.
Things breaking out. So how much time do you spend in the towns along the way?
Too much. And we always end up at the end of the day, you know, rushing to get to the end. And there are people who do just the opposite, who get up at sunrise and hammer it out, you know, to the last town, and then they take a nap in the tent. And, you know, I like to stop and eat and, you know, hang out and meet people. And that to me is, I don't understand the, you know, going as fast as we can and getting done. I like to stop and enjoy, you know, the food and fun along the route. I really enjoyed this year. It's been an easy route, and the weather has been great, and just lots of fun. And you know, naked people occasionally.
All right. We'll check in with you tomorrow, Jason.
Have a good one.
That's our RAGBRAI correspondent, Des Moines-based meteorologist Jason Parkin. And tomorrow on Talk of Iowa, it's Horticulture Day. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. We had production assistance today from Rosalind Sixby, technical support from Michael Yeager in Ames and Sarah McCammon in Des Moines. You can send us email anytime at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.